Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and today we're diving into something that affects literally every single client interaction that you're more than likely to have as a fitness professional. Yet it's probably the area where most trainers, in my opinion, feel the least confident, and that's going to be nutrition. Now, before you think this is just going to be an episode of quote-unquote eat your protein and vegetables conversation, let me be clear about what I'm going to kind of discuss with you here today. And that's we're going to cover the nutrition fundamentals that actually matter in real-world training scenarios. So the stuff that comes up in your first consultation with potentially a new client, the questions that you ask during your training sessions or from friends, family members, and even the confusion that you need to clear up when someone comes to you after trying the latest diet trend that they maybe saw on Instagram or TikTok or any kind of social media. And the thing that nobody likes to really talk about enough is that certifications give you maybe one chapter on nutrition during that process. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. They might think, hey, you're a personal trainer, you're going to know a lot about nutrition. And they touch on a little bit, but I think the more that you can be well-equipped understanding nutrition makes it easier, one, to have these conversations with your clients, and number two, equip you to be able to help them if you need to be able to do that. And we can also even discuss that that can help leverage your ability to potentially make more working with your clients as well, whether that be online or in person. Even though today's discussion is definitely a little more towards working with clients in person, it can certainly apply online as well. So you learn the basic macronutrients, maybe some information about micronutrients, and then you're kind of just sent out into the world with your certification or your education that you might be getting, where clients are going to actually start asking you whether they should be doing keto or intermittent fasting will actually kill their metabolism, help their metabolism, help them see progress, or they need to eat six meals a day to keep their metabolism, quote unquote, fired up. And if you're like most trainers, especially in your first few years, you probably felt that the moment of panic when you realize the gap between what you actually have learned and what you actually need to know to truly help real world people. And that's exactly what I'm going to address today on this episode. It's going to be structured to give you practical based framework for understanding nutrition that you can not only immediately apply with your clients, but hopefully you can use to snowball again to potentially maybe even make some extra revenue off of some of your clients, because your time is ultimately worth money, as well as your education, and using this to help educate you is always going to be a great thing. So first, I'm going to kind of start with the absolute fundamentals, just make sure that we're all on the same page, we understand the hierarchy of what actually matters, and then build into some of the more nuanced topics that are going to separate adequate trainers from exceptional ones, especially on the nutritional front. So we're going to cover things like energy balance and understanding it properly, that it will change everything about how you approach that nutrition. We'll break down some macronutrients in a way that focuses on practical application rather than just memorizing or regurgitating numbers. And we'll also talk about some meal timing and frequency, because your clients will definitely ask about this. Address some of the supplement basics as well, because that's also going to be something that comes up. So you can guide your clients without necessarily overstepping your scope of practice, which I think is also incredibly important when we begin to talk about nutrition and working with people. And we'll finish with how to actually communicate all this to your clients in a way that's going to help improve adherence, and rather than throwing more information at them that's going to confuse them, because there is just so much that can be discussed on the nutrition front. And I find this myself talking with clients both online and in person, and especially working in the sports performance world, working with young athletes, that this is a big gap that most of them don't understand, as well as the fact that their parents also don't understand. So you've got to be able to not only have this information, but you've got to make it easily digestible. And that's not just trying to make a pun there, but really making it something they can take away and use to help accelerate the progress, which ultimately is going to then get them better progress, and then it's also going to make you look much better and more educated as well. And hopefully, again, like I said, that snowballs into potentially more business or better business. So let's start with the absolute foundation of everything nutrition related, and that's going to be energy balance. And I know exactly what most of you are probably thinking, but Brandon, everyone knows it's always about calories in versus calories out. But here's the thing, is knowing about it and truly understanding how to apply it with clients are two completely different things in the real world. Energy balance is the relationship between the energy consumed through food and beverages and the energy that you're going to expend through all your physiological processes and your physical activity. That's very important to understand that your physiological processes are also a big portion of your nutrition. Now it's going to help aid your progress and also something you need to calculate and take into account. So when energy intake equals energy expenditure, you're in an energy balance and weight is going to remain pretty stable. When your intake clearly exceeds the expenditure, you're in a surplus, and that's when weight gain is going to occur. And then when expenditure exceeds intake, you're in a deficit and your weight should decrease. Now that sounds very simple, and that is the most simplest terms. But the reason that this is important is that it's much more important to understand that the energy balance is the primary determinant of your body weight changes, period. Okay. It does not matter if you continually eat nothing but healthy foods. If you continue to eat in a surplus, your client's still going to gain weight. Okay. And at the same time, your client could eat absolutely junk and eat underneath their expenditure and they could lose weight. That still may not be the most healthiest and optimal way to continue to see progress. So there is some of this like middle ground of finding compliance as well as helping them reach their goals depending upon what their goals are, and that energy balance equation does make sense. So every diet that's ever worked for any kind of weight loss, whether you're talking about keto, paleo, being a vegan, a carnivore diet, intermittent fasting, whatever, it's worked because it's created an energy deficit. Every diet that's helped someone gain weight has done so by creating energy surplus. That's just the way that it works, okay? That's general physics here, okay, and biochemistry. Understanding this fundamentally changes how you can approach your client's nutrition because it means that you can cut through all the noise that's out there and focus on what's actually going to drive results and improve their compliance. And so here's where I think most trainers and coaches kind of go wrong. They usually get so caught up in the details of the macro ratios or meal timing or specific food choices that they forget to ensure that the fundamental energy balance is right for the client's goals. That needs to be number one when we're looking at whether it's gaining weight or losing weight. So I've seen trainers and coaches design perfect macronutrient splits and these meal plans for clients who are eating at maintenance calories and wondering why they're not losing weight or losing fat. So the energy balance clearly wasn't addressed or even considered. So let me give you the components of total daily energy expenditure because understanding these can help you better guide your clients. So your TDEE has four main components. First is going to be your basic metabolic rate, your BMR, which is the energy required for basic physiological functions at rest. It's very important to understand, at rest. This accounts for about 60 to 70% of your total daily expenditure for most people. Then you've got the thermic effect of food, which is then the energy required to digest, absorb, and process the nutrients that they're ingesting. This is roughly approximately 10% of that total intake. And third is non-exercise activity thermogenesis, or NEAT, which is all the energy expended throughout your daily activities that aren't structured planned exercise. This can vary wildly between individuals, and it can count for a significant portion of why some people seem to stay lean effortlessly or why they gain weight even when they still continue to cut their calories down. And finally, you have exercise activity thermogenesis, which is the energy expended during structured physical activity. I think a lot of people, especially clients, beginners, they focus on, if I go to the gym, I can focus on losing weight. And I do think it's important that we look at the benefits that come from physical activity, both cardiovascular and strength training. And obviously if you're playing athletics, sporting activities, but most people think about going to the gym and using that as their catalyst to gain weight. And that's not necessarily the most efficient route to go about it. It's still important again for your health. Cannot deny that as a strength coach and performance coach, personal trainer, or whatever you want to love by tie underneath. That's what I personally love to do and help people optimize. But when we really talk about trying to build muscle, gain strength, or lose fat, the nutrition portion of it is going to be a much more important thing to look at underneath the microscope. Now, here's what's critical for you to understand as a trainer coach, that these components are not static, right? When someone goes into an energy deficit, their body adapts. Their BMR can decrease through both the loss of metabolically active tissue, through metabolic adaptations, where the body becomes more efficient. NEAT often decreases unconsciously as people move less throughout the day when they're in a calorie deficit, and because they're feeling lower energy levels. Your energy levels are zapped and your body's not stupid. Your body's naturally going to try to slow you down. And even the thermic effect of food decreases because you're obviously eating less food. This is why aggressive dieting often backfires. Maybe the client comes to you wanting to lose 30 pounds, so they immediately cut their calories in half and add in tons of cardio. Initially, they're going to lose weight pretty quick. But within a few weeks, the weight loss stalls because their body has adapted and their TDEE has decreased significantly. So they're frustrated. As a coach, you could be frustrated. And now you're dealing with someone who's eating very little, doing tons of exercise, and not getting results. Got a client like this right now, as we actually speak, that I started working with relatively recently in my gym. The better approach is understanding that sustainable fat loss requires finding the minimum effective dose. And I cannot state that enough. Too many people want to jump in too fast, too hard, and go all in, rather than just taking the minimum effective dose to get things started. You want to create the smallest deficit that produces results, because this preserves, one, their metabolic capacity. It's also going to maintain their training performance, which I think is very overlooked when it comes to weight loss. And it leaves you room to adjust as the adaptations occur. And this typically means aiming for about 0.5 to 1% body weight loss per week for most of your clients, but maybe slightly more aggressive for those with more fat to lose, because they obviously have more of it to lose. On the flip side of that coin, though, when you're working with clients who need to gain weight, whether that's muscle mass for athletes or just general weight gain for underweight clients or undersized athletes, understanding the energy balance means you recognize that you need a surplus. But again, more isn't always going to be better here. Excessive surpluses just lead to unnecessary fat gain. So research suggests that for optimal muscle gain, a surplus around 200 to 500 calories above the maintenance level is typically sufficient when combined with proper training, proper recovery, and proper sleep. Okay. The key takeaway here is, before you worry about anything else with your client's nutrition, make sure that the energy balance aligns with their initial goal. Everything else is going to be secondary to getting that right. Okay, that's the number one big brick that we've got to stack up for our foundation, is making sure the energy balance side of it is going to line up with that client's goals. And for many people, that's going to have to be starting out learning how to measure food and track calories. And it absolutely sucks. But the good thing is, once you get in the habit of that and eating very similar foods and having similar meals planned out, and begin to make progress, it's easier to start chipping away at some of the serving sizes, and you can stay on things. You don't have to track it all the time. But it is incredibly important that you do have a baseline and you understand what that baseline is. And sometimes for many people, finding out what they're currently doing can give you not only a snapshot of what they're eating and an estimate of where their calories are, but maybe where there's gaps that can be filled as well. And you can find some of that low-hanging fruit to immediately start making some progress, right? It could be as simple as the nutrition isn't too shabby until it comes to the weekends. So maybe you try to do some coaching on focusing on eating well and having a more structured plan during the weekends, so they're not ruining their week worth of progress they did Monday through Friday on Saturdays and Sundays. That's probably the most common one that we see in the actual real world. Okay, now that I've kind of established the energy balance as the foundation, we're going to talk about macronutrients, because while energy balance determines whether your weight goes up or whether your weight goes down, your macronutrient intake influences what the weight is composed of and how your clients feel and perform during the process. I think this is incredibly important. I think too many people try to focus on the macronutrient side first, getting that perfect split, or you know, whether they're going low carb or whatever, and not looking at the energy balance. Get the energy balance first, and the macronutrients will let you tweak things based upon your goals and kind of what they look like. And we'll talk about some of the other stuff here upcoming. So the three macronutrients are protein, carbohydrates, and fats. Each provide energy and serve specific physiological functions in the body, but they're not interchangeable. So let's break down each one of them to focus on what you actually need to know to guide your clients more effectively. So first, I want to start off with protein because it's probably the most important macronutrient to get right for your clients and or even yourself. Protein is composed of amino acids, 9 of which are essential, which just means that the body cannot synthesize them and they must be obtained through the diet. So protein serves numerous functions, including muscle protein synthesis, immune function, enzyme and hormone production, and providing structure to your tissues. For your clients who are training, protein intake needs to be sufficient to support muscle protein synthesis and the recovery from their training. The research here is very, very clear, kind of night and day. For individuals engaged in resistance training, protein intake of about 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight per day optimizes muscle protein synthesis. For those of you in the American or the Freedom units, that's about 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of body weight, which is usually kind of the quote-unquote gold standard, is 1 gram per pound of body weight. Now, for someone who weighs approximately 80 kilograms or about 175 pounds, that's roughly 130 to 175 grams of protein every single day. Now, where trainers often make mistakes with protein recommendations is first going way overboard. I have seen numerous trainers and coaches prescribe, you know, 250, 300 grams of protein daily for clients that, you know, weigh barely 200 pounds. And there's no evidence that really exceeding about 2.2 grams per kilogram or that 1 gram per pound of body weight provides any kind of additional benefits for muscle growth. And it often comes at the expense of obviously the carbohydrate or the fat intake, which could better support your performance and your adherence, not only from your performance from your strength training sessions, but if you're doing athletics, you know, it could be taking away some of that as well. Yeah, I'm not knocking on protein, but there is kind of a point of diminishing returns, and that 1 gram per pound of body weight seems to be around that area, except in when we start getting to like some of the bodybuilding populations and really trying to get as lean as you possibly can. There can be some potential benefits there, but we're not really going to discuss that here today. We're talking about the average person really just trying to improve their lifestyle, lose some weight, feel better, improve the energy, mood. You get the whole drift. So the second mistake is going to be not adjusting the protein recommendations based on their energy status. So when clients are in an energy deficit, protein requirements actually increase just a little bit, with the research suggesting about 2.3 to 3.1 grams per kilogram of lean individuals in aggressive deficits to preserve their muscle mass. And this is kind of what I'm talking, trying to get to a little bit, is that the leaner that you are and the leaner that you're trying to get, the higher that protein needs to potentially be. But again, going back to the average person, and you're working with most clients or even for yourself, aim for that 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight first. That's going to give you a good starting point. But your protein quality does also matter. So complete proteins contain all the essential amino acids in adequate amounts. Animal proteins are going to be the best here. Things like meat, fish, poultry, eggs, and dairy are complete proteins. Most plant proteins are incomplete proteins, though combinations like rice and beans provide complete amino acid profiles. So for clients following more plant-based diets, you'll want to really ensure that they're combining complementary proteins or consuming a variety throughout the day to meet those essential amino acid requirements and or using a supplement, which we'll get to later, to be able to fill those gaps. Next, moving to carbohydrates. Carbs usually get villainized in popular diet culture, but for your clients who are training hard, carbohydrates are incredibly crucial. Carbohydrates are the primary fuel source for high intensity exercise. So they're stored as glycogen in your muscles and liver. And these stores are what fuel intense training sessions. And here's what matters from a practicality standpoint. Clients engaged in their high intensity training or high training volumes need adequate carbohydrates to support their performance and their recovery. The research suggests that athletes may need anywhere from 3 to 7 grams per kilogram of body weight, depending on their training volume and intensity. And for the average general pop client or person doing 3 to 4 resistance training sessions per week, would also qualify for this, something in the range of 3 to 4 kilograms per kilogram, 3 to 4 grams, excuse me, per kilogram of body weight is typically adequate. So, you know, clearly the higher volume of the training, the more carbohydrates that person is going to be able to need to be able to sustain their performance and feel good, especially when we start talking about losing fat, because you're trying to put in these high intensity sessions and workouts, and you want to have good workouts too. I mean, we can't forget about that. It's not just to fuel them to recover and have those. We want to make sure that the training feels good, because we have the energy, we're going to be more compliant on the training side as well. And the mistake that I see that most trainers and coaches typically make, or even just the average person thinking, is that they need a very low carb intake to be able to see progress, even while they're training hard, which then tanks their performance, not just adjusting their carbohydrate intake based on their training demand. So on rest days or even lower activity-based days, clients don't need as many carbohydrates as they do on their heavy training days. Teaching clients to adjust their intake based on activity level is a valuable skill. Now, to make it easy, many people do like to just flat load their carbohydrates, say 200 grams of carbs per day, for example, even on the days they're not active. And over the course of the week, that's going to balance out. And as long as, again, they're still in a calorie deficit, they will lose weight. Or if they're in a calorie surplus over the course of the total of a week, they will continue to gain weight and build muscle and get stronger. So for some people, eating the same stuff or having the same meals very similarly makes it very easy from a meal prep perspective. But if you are into more of a carb cycling approach, having higher demands and higher carbs, lower demands, lower carbs, I personally am kind of a fan of that myself. But you do have to teach your clients how to do that. So the more beginner your client is, keep it relatively simple. The more advanced they are or the leaner they are trying to get, then you can get a little bit more creative on the carbohydrate front to have that energy balance demand more with their activity level. So carbohydrate timing is something that I'll cover a little bit more later, but know that having carbohydrates available around your training, whether that's before, during, and or after, supports your performance and recovery better than consuming the same total carbohydrates spread randomly throughout the day. We'll kind of go to the research of that a little bit, but let's kind of go into fats now as well, this portion of the podcast. Your dietary fat is essential for hormone production, including your testosterone and other steroid hormones. Absorption of fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K, cellular structure and function, and providing essential fatty acids that the body cannot produce by itself. Fat requirements are actually the most flexible of the three between protein, carbohydrates, and fats, but there are still minimum thresholds that you ideally want to ingest. Research suggests that fat intake should be at least about 0.5 to 1 gram per kilogram of body weight to support your natural hormonal function, with many people performing and feeling better with intakes of 1 to 1.5 grams per kilogram. The composition of fat also matters to a degree. You have your saturated fats, your monounsaturated fats, and your polyunsaturated fats, including omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. Now, while the research on optimal fat composition is still kind of evolving basically every day with the way research is going, current evidence currently suggests that emphasizing unsaturated fats, particularly omega-3 fatty acids from sources like fatty fish, while not completely eliminating saturated fats, which plays roles in your hormone production. So your practical thing here for your macros with your clients is start with your protein based on their body weight and their training status. Typically that 1.6 to 2.2 grams per kilogram. So aim for about a gram per pound of body weight for those of you using Freedom Units. Then set a minimum fat intake of about 0.5 to 1 gram per kilogram. So again, about close to 1 gram per their kilogram. So basically you go 0.5 of their body weight. So if we use someone like me, for example, 150 pounds, aiming for about 75 grams of fat per day would be a good place to kind of start. And then whatever calories remain after that, accounting for the protein and the fat, then you can use that as the carbohydrates based on the training demands, the preferences, their goals, their adherence factors. Some people enjoy carbohydrates. Some people do better without them. As you get to know and work with more people, you can kind of figure out what works better for certain people. But usually that's kind of where I like to start first. And I start with the protein first, get that out of the way, then find the fat that's going to be ideal. Again, I kind of like starting with half of their body weight in grams of fat and then seeing how much room I have left on the carbohydrate front. And if I know there's somebody that likes carbs or they have a very high training volume, then we can focus on pushing those carbohydrates higher, especially if it comes about gaining fat. I'm sorry, gaining weight, gaining muscle. Now, when it comes to losing fat, usually the first place I start to peel stuff a little bit is on the carbohydrate front. And that usually will be a good place to start to try to adjust your calories. And then you can kind of go from there based upon what your client would be telling you. I think this is a very flexible approach. It works much better than having a rigid macro prescription, like, or using going off of certain percentages. A very common ones like 40-30-20, I think, where you have 40% come from your carbohydrates, 30% come from protein, and 20% come from fat. You'll see sometimes the carbohydrate and the protein mix around that 40-30. You'll see different percentage splits no matter what you punch into the Google machine. But I do think going with the body weight for protein, half your body weight in fat, and then adjusting your carbohydrates for individual, I think is probably the better place to start. It gives you a lot more wiggle room. And to me, it's also just super easy to remember. All right, let's go to the next segment here. And let's kind of talk about meal timing and frequency, because this is where a lot of nutrition myths live. And your clients are definitely going to bring it up at some point. It's going to happen. You're going to hear the old school bodybuilding advice, where it was to eat like these six small meals spread evenly throughout the day to, you know, keep your metabolism up and to optimize muscle growth. Then intermittent fasting kind of became popular, and suddenly everyone was kind of told that meal frequency doesn't matter at all and you should just eat in this little 8-hour window. So which of those is really best, or what's true? And the research tells us that meal frequency itself has a minimal impact on the metabolic rate or your total daily energy expenditure when total calorie and macronutrient intake are controlled. So the idea that eating more frequently significantly boosts your metabolism is largely a myth. Now, you do get a slight increase in energy expenditure after eating due to the thermic effect of food, but eating those six meals versus three meals with the same total calories and the same macronutrients is going to have roughly the same total thermic effect over the course of the day. The one little caveat that I would like to talk, though, about this is that the bodybuilding population, this became popular because eating the six meals mean that you were getting nice, steady streams of amino acids consistently throughout the day. And I do believe that if you are trying to build muscle mass or improve your strength, this becomes a little bit more important, because the best way that I heard this discussed was through Justin Harris from Troprona Nutrition, was that your body can only build so much muscle tissue in a day, and it's not very much. It's a couple grams. And I mean, he may even be taking this research off of those that use performance enhancing drugs. We're going to assume that they're not. But anytime that your body is like, hey, we're ready to build, let's just say a gram of muscle tissue, just to make this a very simple explanation. We're ready to build a gram of muscle tissue. So the body goes into the bloodstream to find some amino acids to build that new gram of muscle tissue. And if there are not amino acids present, you just missed out on opportunity to build muscle tissue. Now, that's an oversimplification, but I do believe that that's a good way to look at how your protein should be ingested. So I do think that there is some merit that if it comes to building strength and muscle, you definitely want to have that available. And if you're in severe fat loss mode, again, going back to more of the bodybuilding physique, you want to have those amino acids relatively consistently as well, more so from the fact that you want to ensure that you're not using muscle tissue to provide your body energy whenever your calories are incredibly low. So there is some validity to the meal frequency on those very specific, you know, niche areas. But for the average person, if you're eating 3 to 5 meals per day and you've got protein to eat every single one of those meals, especially stacked with some fat to help draw out that absorption, you're going to be completely fine. Don't worry about having to have that 6-7 super high meal frequency to be able to lose weight. I don't think that's absolutely necessary. It's not even really that necessary to build muscle. But if you want to maximize it, I do think having, if in doubt, have more meals than have less meals, just so that that amino acid is available in the bloodstream when your body is ready for it. Now, for fat loss specifically, meal frequency doesn't appear to matter much as long as the total energy intake creates the deficit, going back to the energy balance equation. Some research has shown that successful fat loss with everything from 1 meal per day to 6 meals per day, as long as the energy deficit is present. Now, however, and this is pretty important to understand, is that meal frequency and timing do matter for the other factors, including satiety and adherence, your training performance and recovery, and muscle protein synthesis, going back to maximizing, building the most amount of muscle as possible. So let's talk and break these down a little bit. For satiety and adherence, this is highly individualistic for every single person. Some people feel better and more satisfied eating frequent small meals throughout the day. I think a lot about this when it came to my wife being pregnant, right? Her eating those much smaller meals kept her feeling better, especially in the nausea and like the first trimester. So there are specific situations in certain populations where this may be very true. Other people prefer fewer and much bigger meals. There's no universal best approach here. What matters is finding the meal frequency that supports the client's adherence to, one, their total calories intake and their macronutrient targets. If someone is constantly hungry, eating 3 meals per day, and that's causing them to either overeat or have a cheat snack or what have you, then increasing meal frequency may help those individuals. If someone feels restricted and annoyed having to eat 6 times per day, it does not work well with their schedule, then reducing the frequency might improve their adherence as well and makes it feel a little bit easier and more increased ability to accomplish the task that you're providing them. For training and performance and recovery, timing matters a little bit more. So having adequate carbohydrates available around your training sessions is going to support that performance. This doesn't mean that you need to eat immediately before you train, but having eaten a carbohydrate-based meal or even a meal having some carbohydrates a couple hours before your training generally supports better performance than training in a completely fasted state, especially for high intensity based work, a la strength training. Now, post-training nutrition also matters. And while the quote unquote anabolic window has been somewhat overhyped, there is some benefit to consuming protein relatively soon after training. The research suggests that consuming 20 to 40 grams of high quality protein within a few hours after training supports muscle protein synthesis. The exact timing is less crucial than once kind of thought, you know, the old school bodybuilding days, as soon as you get on training, you go put down a whey protein shake. Don't think that's necessarily true. Usually if within a couple hours after you've trained, if you can get some protein ingested, whether that be a protein shake or even whole foods, does not matter. But trying to get some protein into your system within a couple hours of training is definitely going to be more ideal from the muscle protein synthesis side of things. And it's even less important if the client has had protein in their body as, say, an hour or two before they train, because that's already in the blood system and their bloodstream while they're training. But having protein intake distributed throughout the day with some attention to that pre- and post-training intake, I think is a pretty reasonable approach. So if you're eating, you just don't want to go in super starving, and you don't want to go 8 hours after you've trained before you get another meal in, right? Kind of just think logically about how your training fits in with your training day and finding meals that work well around that the best you can, or pre-planning some very small snacks, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours before plan to go to the gym, just so that you have ample energy to be able to give your best and without any other reason at all, just to support your training goals more so than anything else. You're just going to feel better. For muscle protein synthesis, here's ideally what matters. For muscle protein synthesis is stimulated by consuming adequate protein, particularly the amino acid leucine. And this goes way back to thinking about the old school carb backloading. Anybody that knows me knows I was big on carb backloading whenever I did powerlifting. I still think it's a great dietary approach. I think the way Kiefer went into it back in the day was a little weird. I mixed it up and did some different things. I've even wrote blogs about it before. I do think that the leucine piece, though, is probably the key takeaway from that whole dietary approach. So this response, the muscle protein synthesis, lasts for several hours after the protein consumption. So research suggests that distributing protein intake across 3 to 4 meals throughout the day, with each meal containing about 20 to 40 grams of protein, optimizes protein synthesis throughout the day better than consuming the same total amount of protein in just 1 or 2 meals. So your practical recommendation here for your clients is to consume protein 3 to 4 times throughout the day, with each serving containing adequate protein, again, aiming for that 20 to 40 grams, depending upon your body size, your goals, whether you're trying to gain weight, lose weight. Time at least one of these protein servings within a few hours before and or after training. Beyond that, structure your meal frequency and timing based on personal preference, your schedule, and what supports adherence to the total calorie and the macro targets. So again, going back to having just a loose structure, a rough time frame of when you're going to eat these meals, and you're going to be completely fine. Now, for clients that are interested in intermittent fasting, you can certainly make this work. The benefits that people experience with intermittent fasting typically comes from the structure helping them control their total calorie intake, not from any magic metabolic effects of fasting itself. Now, if a client wants to do intermittent fasting and can still hit their protein targets distributed adequately and within their kind of eating window that they have set for themselves, and it doesn't negatively impact their training performance, which I think is also key to understand, then I do believe that it's a viable approach. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But it's not superior to other eating patterns when calories and macros are matched. So just make sure you understand that. You really just want to find, again, what works best for the client. If they are adamant on doing intermittent fasting, find a way to make it work with them so that where you can, quote unquote, trick them that they are doing intermittent fasting. But again, they're still getting the calories that they need to get based upon their goals, gaining weight or losing weight. They're still hitting their protein targets, and those protein targets are spread out throughout the day or throughout their window that they have chosen. So that way that you at least turning over the big rocks, and if it makes them more compliant, then it's going to be a win-win for everybody. The key message that I want you to take from this really is flexibility. You don't need to get dogmatic about meal timing and the frequency. Again, focus on that total intake first, then optimize timing and frequency based on their individualistic factors that support their adherence and their performance. If you do that, you're going to be able to get them results much better, and you're going to have a lot less friction from a coaching perspective. Okay, now let's briefly talk about micronutrients and hydration as I drink my Element. Because while I don't think these directly impact the body composition the way that the energy balance and macros do, they are crucial for health, performance, and your recovery. There's no denying that. Your micronutrients are going to include your vitamins and your minerals. They don't provide energy like macronutrients in terms of that they actually give you the physical kcals and actually are going to give you the ATP, but they're essential for the countless physiological processes, including your energy metabolism, your immune function, your bone health, your antioxidant-based defenses, and basically everything else that keeps the body functioning optimally, okay? So while your food is your physical fuel that will actually get your car from point A to point B, you have to think of your micronutrients almost like your other fluids in your car, right? You need your wiper fluid. You need your oil. You need your transmission fluid. You need your brake fluid, right? If you're low or you don't have these things, the car is not going to perform optimally. It can still perform and still get you from point A to point B, but you're kind of flirting with disaster because when you run out of these things, then issues begin to come up and your body is no different. So as a trainer or coach, you don't have to be an expert on every single micronutrient, and I don't really think you should, and I am nowhere near this when it comes to the micronutrient side. But you should understand the very basics that most macronutrient needs can be met through a diet that is varied, that is going to have fruits, vegetables, whole grains, your lean proteins, your fats. The more variety in your client's diet, particularly, and we talk about using the rainbow, their call for fruits and vegetables, the more likely they are to meet those micronutrient needs. Now, however, there are some populations and situations where micronutrient deficiencies are more common, and clients following a very low-calorie diet may struggle to meet some of these micronutrient needs simply because they're just eating less total food. You see this a lot more, again, in the bodybuilding population when they're trying to get incredibly lean because their food content just gets so low. And when you start really restricting carbohydrates and everything else, you might also start to see some of those vitamins and micronutrients go away. Clients following restrictive diets, like a vegan diet, may need to pay particular attention to specific nutrients like vitamin B12, iron, calcium, omega-3 fatty acids, which are more readily available in animal-based products. Athletes with very high training volumes or clients with very high training volumes may have increased needs for certain minerals like iron and magnesium. And I definitely think magnesium is a big one that many athletes miss out on the micronutrient front. So from a practical side, you want to encourage clients and athletes to eat a varied diet with plenty of whole foods as much as they possibly can. And if a client is following a very restrictive diet or has specific health concerns, recommend that they work with a registered dietitian. And this is where an RD comes incredibly helpful because they can actually give these specific things that this person is going to need. That, again, that kind of steps outside of our scope of practice as personal trainers and performance coaches. Or if they happen to have specific health concerns, then, you know, you can bounce that off and back and forth with the registered dietitian as well. As a trainer and coach, you can encourage good general practices, but detailed micronutrient management is beyond our scope of practice unless you have the additional credentials to be able to back that and be able to ultimately cover you from a protective policy standpoint. You know, you don't want to get sued and get in deep trouble for recommending something that's outside your scope of practice. That's a big no-no, and you don't want to lose your money, your hard-earned work, and your ability to work with people because you're making ill-informed decisions that are outside of your scope. Do not do that. Regarding supplements, and I'll talk about this a little bit more here later, but a basic multivitamin can serve as a great nutritional insurance for clients who struggle to get in a variety of their diet. Again, it's not a replacement for eating well, but it's kind of just a nice little buffer. And I personally am a big fan of taking a multivitamin year-round, especially when we get into the cold and flu month seasons like now. People do not get outside as much to get as much vitamin D. They're surrounded inside around the same people, right? So I think a multivitamin is a great just buffer that everybody should take. They're just so affordable nowadays. I really think there's no reason that you shouldn't take one just to be on the safe side. I do personally recommend taking Nutribio. So if you happen to want to have a multivitamin from Nutribio, their multisport is fantastic. It's so well. I only take half a serving a day, and it meets all the needs that I need. So if you're interested in picking something up from Nutribio, just check them out at Nutribio.com and enter the code SMITLEY10, SMITLEY10. That'll save you 10% off and let you know that I sent them to you from one of my accounts, however you happen to be listening to this, whether that be on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, whatever you happen to be listening to. Now, on the hydration side, this is simple, but it's very important. Water is involved in basically every physiological process within our body. And for performance, even mild dehydration of around 2% of your body weight can impair your exercise performance, particularly the endurance side of performance. For clients that are training incredibly hard, the adequate hydration supports their performance, their recovery, and their overall health. This is something that I have to like scream down my athlete and clients and parents' throats, is that not only should your kid be drinking the water, they need to make sure that they have the proper electrolytes as well with that hydration. Again, going back to drinking my element. Those of you that consider yourself high performers, or you are high performers, or you train really hard, or you have clients that work really hard, make sure they understand this, that they can see some pretty big performance decreases just by not being hydrated. Practical recommendations on the hydration front are pretty easy and straightforward. Clients, you want to recommend that they drink enough fluid throughout the day that their urine is a pale yellow or even less. And during their training, especially in the hot environments or during the long training sessions, they should drink enough to minimize body weight loss from actual sweating during their workouts. A reasonable approach is drinking about half a liter of water for every hour of training. So basically, it's about a 16-ounce bottle of water for every hour that you train, and adjusting based on your sweat rate and obviously the environmental conditions that you happen to be training in. For most clients doing a typical training session, whether it be personal training or athletic performance, water is sufficient for majority of them for their hydration. Sports drinks do contain electrolytes, and some also contain carbohydrates, and they can be beneficial for those longer or harder training sessions that are usually, you know, 60 to 90 minutes in those extreme hot weather based training sessions, or where the sweat rates are incredibly high, so you just got a super sweater. But they're not necessary for the average 1 hour long training session for most of your clients that are getting their quality workout in. Just good old fashioned bottle of water will do the trick for most of them, especially if they're drinking water before they come in, after, right? They're staying well hydrated throughout the day as well. The key point here is that while the micronutrients and hydration might not directly change their body composition, they definitely impact how your clients are going to feel, perform, and recover from their training sessions. A client who's deficient in the key nutrients, or they're chronically dehydrated, they will not get as optimal results from their training, no matter how perfect their macros and energy balance is. We want to focus on a holistic approach here as well, how they feel, right? We do want to help people lose weight, but we also want to help improve their health. And being hydrated, having the macronutrients, and being able to do that, it's just going to let you be able to squeeze every ounce and everything else that you're doing on the big front. Again, going back to the fluids of your car, still make sure that you're adjusting the gas tank appropriately and how much fuel you're putting in, but pay attention to the other fluids as well, because that will dictate how well your car, in this case, your body, is going to perform. Now let's talk about supplements, because this is definitely going to come up with your clients as well. You will very rarely probably not have to discuss supplements somewhere, being in the fitness world, especially working with athletes or clients. So, you know, you can walk into just about any gym nowadays and you're going to see people have these lovely shaker bottles, either full of pre-workout or their Monster or their Ghost, their protein powder, maybe some amino acids, maybe they're even taking a fat burner. Who knows what they're possibly taking that the bro from GNC got them to buy. The supplement industry is enormous and the marketing is incredibly aggressive. Your clients rely on us to help them cut through all the noise and provide honest and ideally evidence-based guidance when it comes to making supplement recommendation and choices. So first, let's establish the scope of practice issue here. And as a personal trainer or performance coach without additional credentials in nutrition, just a regular CPT or CSCS, you need to be careful about how you discuss your supplementation. In most jurisdictions, you cannot prescribe specific supplements or dosages. What you can do is provide general education about supplements that have research supporting the claims that you're giving them, and encourage your clients to consult with a physician before starting any new supplement, especially if they have any health conditions or take medications. It's going to give you a blanket of coverage here. Provide them the education and say, this is kind of what's out there. This is what it is. This is how I would recommend, but you can't recommend exactly how much to take or say, hey, you have to take this as part of my nutritional approach. You cannot do that from a liability perspective. Now, with all this said, let's talk about what actually has research to support it so that you can help them make informed decisions, because the reality is the vast majority of supplements on the market have little or no evidence supporting their effectiveness, but there are a few that do have quite a bit of robust research backing them. Protein powder is going to be the most common supplement that is also one of the most useful, in my opinion. Here's the thing, that when it comes to protein powder, is it's just food in a convenient form. It's not magic. If clients are meeting their protein targets through whole foods, they don't need a protein supplement or powder. Where protein powder is useful for convenience and for clients who struggle to eat enough protein through the whole foods alone. Whey protein is quickly digested. It has excellent amino acid profile, making it particularly useful around the training window, going back to the old school bodybuilding recommendations. Plant-based proteins can work well too, though you might need to get slightly higher amounts based on the same amino acid profile delivery that you would try to get from like a whey supplement. Next is going to be creatine monohydrate. It's probably the single most well-researched and effective supplement for improving training performance and muscle growth. Creatine helps regenerate ATP during high-intensity exercise, allowing for slightly better performance during training, which can then lead to greater adaptations over time. The standard dosing is about 5 grams per day. It's usually kind of the norm. And the old practice of loading with 20 grams per day isn't necessary. Some people are considered non-responders to creatine, and there's some evidence that people who eat a lot of red meat may already have saturated their creatine stores. But for most clients, creatine is safe and effective and definitely one worth considering if you're doing all the other stuff right. Definitely do recommend it for those high performers. Caffeine is another well-supported supplement for improving performance. It works through multiple mechanisms, through reducing perceived exertion and improving focus and alertness. Dosages of about 3 to 6 milligrams per kilogram of body weight consumed about 30 to 60 minutes before training can improve your performance. For someone weighing about 80 kilograms, again, going back to that, like 175, 240 to 480 milligrams of caffeine. But here's the important part. Tolerance develops with regular use. It can interfere with sleep if consumed too late in the day, and some people are more sensitive to caffeine than others. It's effective, but it does need to be used strategically. I do have a whole episode on just caffeine and energy drinks here on the Thirst for More podcast. It's probably like 6 or 8 episodes before this one. I'll try to remember to link it in the show notes if you happen to be interested in checking in that out whole episode. Next is going to be beta-alanine, and it does have some evidence for improving high-intensity exercise performance, particularly for efforts lasting 1 to 4 minutes. Beta-alanine works by buffering the acid in the muscles. The standard dose is considered 3 to 6 grams per day. Some people experience that tingling sensation from the beta-alanine, which is harmless, but for some people it can also be uncomfortable. But it is another supplement that's worth considering, especially if you consider yourself a high performer. You are taking creatine. This does pair well nice with that. And again, doing all the other small things well first before you go into just jumping in and taking beta-alanine. Another one I really like to support is fish oil or omega-3-based supplements. These are beneficial for clients who don't regularly consume fatty fish. So if you live relatively inland like myself, getting quality fish, especially year-round, is very hard. Some people just like the taste of it. It is a little bit more on the pricey side. Therefore, an omega-3 supplement can be very beneficial for those people. Omega-3 fatty acids have anti-inflammatory properties that support your cardiovascular health, and they also have been linked to having reduced inflammation and improving even the way that your joints feel. And it's obviously good for like your hair, your brain health, your eye health. There's a lot of just general health benefits from omega-3s as well. But from a performance standpoint, the anti-inflammatory cardiovascular health benefits are very nice to have. A dose of about 1 to 3 grams of combined EPA and DHA per day is pretty typical. For most people, if you're taking 2 to 4 pills per day, you're going to be able to hit that spot pretty well. And if you're somebody that eats fish, then you don't have to worry about this again. If you eat fish a little bit, maybe 1 or 2 pills a day, it's really just going to depend upon how much fish that you like to eat and or have access to, and even the quality of that fish. But for most people, I do think it's a kind of a safe thing that you kind of put up there with your regular standard multivitamin. If you're taking a multivitamin, just take an omega-3 pill with it or two as well a day, and that's going to cover a lot of your health benefits on the macronutrient side and just overall improve how your body feels. Another one is going to be vitamin D, and I think it's worth mentioning because of the deficiency is relatively common, especially in people who do not get much sun exposure. Vitamin D plays some pretty crucial roles in terms of bone health, your immune function, and possibly even muscle function. Clients that get their vitamin D levels checked ideally should be able to keep track of this a little bit better, and you supplement if you are deficient as well. I would recommend on the vitamin D front that you look for vitamin D3. That's going to be the most ideal way. I have a terrible time pronouncing that. I think it's like crucifol or whatever. I know I butchered the way that's said. Just look for vitamin D3, though, especially in the winter months. If you're not getting outside, highly recommend that. If you're in doubt, get a blood test. See where your vitamin D levels are. I personally take vitamin D3 year-round. I take 5,000 IUs completely year-round. There's also some in my multivitamin as well, so I'm really getting more than that. I'm probably getting closer to 6,000 IUs a day, every single day. I unfortunately do not get outside as much as I would like, just with my lifestyle and my work schedule. It just does not happen as much as I would like. Weekends a little easier during the week. It can be hard, especially during the winter months. I am basically inside all the time. I do believe that vitamin D does help my energy levels. I do feel much better. There's just a lot of good quality research that supports vitamin D. So definitely consider taking that if that is something that you believe that you need. But again, talk to your physician, get a blood test, and that will help steer you in the right direction there. Now let's talk about what doesn't work, or in my opinion, what is not worth the money and research kind of says is not worth the money. The first is going to be BCAAs or branched chain amino acids. They're often marketed for your muscle growth and recovery. But the truth is, if your clients are consuming enough adequate quality protein, BCAAs provide no additional benefit. They're literally just expensive flavored amino acids that you're already getting from the protein that you're ingesting. Fat burners are another one. They typically contain stimulants like caffeine plus various other ingredients with minimal evidence for effectiveness, or they're just not dosed high enough that you're actually going to get anything out of it. They're also incredibly expensive for the most part because, again, they're going off the marketing thing. Any fat loss from these products comes primarily from the caffeine content and possibly from appetite suppression, not from any kind of magical fat burning properties that you're getting from that supplementation. Again, if you're doing everything perfectly and you're trying to get as lean as you possibly can, there can be some benefits. But for most people, for your personal training and athletic-based clients, don't recommend wasting your time there. You can get the same effect from coffee for just a fraction of the price. So if you love some good quality coffee, even just find a better quality coffee. I really like some mushroom coffee. That for me gives me mental clarity. I stay locked in, a little more mental focus. I think that works great for many people as well to consider. If you don't like coffee, then you can try to find something similar that provides caffeine. But coffee is just a very, very affordable way to get that caffeine. Testosterone boosters marketed towards the natural athletes rarely actually do much to actually increase testosterone to a meaningful degree in healthy individuals. I will say that I think some of the testosterone supplements have gotten a little bit better at finding herbs and things that can maybe help boost your testosterone just a little bit if you are on the low testosterone side. But most contain ingredients like Tribulus testosterone or fenugreek, which have minimal evidence for actual effectiveness. Again, you might be able to see a little bit of bump for a period of time, but I don't think it's worth the money. I think it's just better off, again, to get your blood work done with your physician, see where testosterone levels are, and if low testosterone as a male is something that you are battling and that you need to address, then you work closely with your physician to be able to get that figured out, because that will ultimately, one, help you feel better, your energy levels will be better, your sleep's going to be better, your training's going to be better, everything's going to be feel better. You're going to probably be able to get leaner easier if you're a guy. I do think it is something that you should definitely get checked out, especially if you're over 30 years old. You should definitely get your blood work checked out at least once a year. And then once you get past 40, I think doing it several times per year and or working closely with a physician would be the best route to go. Again, I am not a physician. That's just my opinion. Something to worth consider if you are working with personal training clients, where they talk about not being able to lose weight or not feeling good or their sleep sucks. Having or recommending they get blood work done will help you tremendously and help guiding them in the right direction. That could be enough to just immediately improve their quality of life. And I've had several clients that I've worked with both in person and online where just getting them hooked up with the proper provider and getting on HRT if they do need to be on it has made a huge difference both for their training and their life. Here's your practical approach with your clients on supplements though. First is ensure that their diet is solid, right? Supplements should support and supplement a good quality diet. They should not replace it. Number two is going to be to focus on the few supplements with the strong evidence against going back to protein powder if they need the convenience, or maybe they are just a larger individual. I think protein powder works great there. Creatine monohydrate for most clients, again, is very well supported. And even possibly using caffeine strategically during low energy levels, or if your calories are on the lower side and you need the extra energy boost going into some hard training sessions or hard workouts for some of your clients or athletes, I think is not a bad recommendation there. Third, you want to remind your clients that supplements may be like 1 to 2% of the equation, right? their training and their basic nutrition habits and their sleep are far more superior to any supplement that they could possibly take. Unless they are deficient in a micronutrient or something that blood work has linked that they need to increase, then I do think that moves it up the importance. Even if it's not necessarily going to help you lose weight or, you know, gain muscle or whatever, if it improves your quality of life and how you feel and improves your overall health, I do think it is important that you address that, again, working closely with your physician. Number four, always encouraging your clients to check with their physician before they start supplements, especially if they have any kind of health conditions, take medications, or if they have any glaring health issues that you are unaware of or you are, you know, not too sure of, just pass that on to the physician and go from there, and then kind of work closely with the client, the physician, as you need to. Don't let your clients waste their money on supplements that have weak evidence just because the marketing is compelling, the GNC bro is trying to sell them something. Our job as trainers and coaches is to provide honest, ideally evidence-based guidance when we can, even if it means telling them that they don't need something that the industry is trying to shove down their throat through Instagram, TikTok, and get our way back to that GNC salesman. All right, we've covered the nutritional fundamentals, but here's the thing that separates the great trainers from just the good ones. Knowing information and effectively communicating that information to create behavior change are completely different skills. You can know everything we've discussed today that I've talked about, but if you can't translate it into actual guidance that clients can actually follow, it doesn't really matter about knowing it. As the saying goes, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So passing on that you care about their health, you're trying to get them the best results possible, you're trying to maybe even potentially save them hundreds of dollars, you know, because they could be wasting hundreds of dollars on supplements. I know personally, me and my wife, through Nutribio, we spend a couple hundred dollars a month on supplements from multivitamins, vitamin D, protein, creatine, NAC, ZMA. Like we take quite a few supplements. And the ones that we take, we know, again, going back to having evidence that support them, but also improve our overall health and maximize every ounce that we can squeeze in our workouts, but our lifestyle and the things that we do. They are things that we believe in. We do not take, you know, junk-based supplements or anything like that. Every now and then we might have a pre-workout that we have on hand, but it's not something that we bank on. It's something that we take maybe, you know, a couple times a month at the absolute most, right? So I can't tell clients to not take stuff and then me take all this wild stuff from the sun. I take stuff that, again, that I would recommend that my clients take if they were to talk to me about it. Let's talk about how you can communicate this nutrition effectively with your clients or your athletes in a way that creates adherence and the results, also making you look good as a trainer or coach, but also helps your athletes and clients at the same time. Principle number one is going to be meet your clients where they are. Not every single person that's is going to need or want a detailed discussion of, you know, muscle protein synthesis, metabolic adaptation, whatever. Some clients do want to dive deep into that science, and I think that's great. It makes it fun for me to be able to kind of nerd out with them. But most of them are just wanting clear, simple guidance so they can actually implement it and see progress. So our job is to assess that level of detail and understanding that they have and serve each individual client to the best of our ability to make it as simple and actual as possible. For clients that are new to tracking nutrition, food, how much they eat, or maybe who are overwhelmed by all the information that's out there because it's just absurd, start as simple as possible. Maybe you just focus on protein intake and total calories first, and then let the carbs and fats just fall where they fall, right? I think that's the best way for many beginners to go. And then you start to focus on simple portion control strategies rather than the precise macro tracking. The goal is to create the small wins, build that confidence before adding the complexity. And I believe this is where most coaches and honestly the clients have the much issue too, is that again they want to dive in 1000% in and they want an exact meal plan, exactly what they're supposed to eat in time. The hardest part of working with people nutrition wise and doing our jobs is getting them to pump the brakes and make the simplest changes, because most of them feel that they're not doing enough, and we have to be able to reiterate and explain to them that we want to make small effective changes. Because ultimately our job is to improve their quality of life and teach them how to eat. We don't want to hold their hand for the rest of their life and force feed them these meal plans that they can't adhere to. So make sure that they understand that. Principle number two is going to be focusing on behaviors, not just the outcomes that come from them. So instead of only discussing what the scale should do, talk about the exact actions that will lead to that outcome. What does eating 160 grams of protein per day actually look like in terms of the meals and the food choices? How can a client structure their day to make sure that they're not only eating enough before their training to come in energized and feeling good, also what they're doing afterwards? Can these behavioral conversations, you know, can they become more useful? And also, can they become more purely outcome-focused discussions, right? We want to make sure that we focus on the behavior. We're going back to that point number one. We're trying to teach them how to do things, not holding their hand to that outcome. You know, you can, as the saying goes, you can lead a horse to water. You know, that's great. But you want to actually teach them how to find that water on their own in the long run. Principle number three is going to be address the adherence factors. The best nutrition plan in the world is completely useless if they can't follow it or they don't follow it. So that means having honest conversations with what fits their lifestyle, their schedule, their preferences, maybe even their social situations, how often they like to go out and do things. If those, if that person or client loves eating out with their friends on the weekends, try to figure out a way to build that into their plan rather than prescribing something that requires eating that bland chicken and rice 7 days a week, the old school bodybuilding style. The flexible approaches that account for the real life activities that your clients and people like to do work better than those rigid rules. Again, going back to that, many clients want the stupid rigid diet plan, and it's very hard to get them to understand that they don't A, need to do that. And if we can find something that is more balanced and more structured, and there is a structure in place, but allows for choices. You just have to make the smart choices and everything will be okay in the long run. Is again going to be much better over the long run for that person rather than going hard for 30 days and then falling off the bandwagon. Principle number four is going to be teaching clients how to think. Don't just give them the exact rules to follow. Again, going back to teaching them how to do shit. If you only give them the meal plan to follow, what happens when they go to that restaurant and what's at that restaurant is nowhere near what's on their plan? Or what happens when they go to travel for work, or when their schedule happens to change? Maybe they're working swing shifts. Instead, we want to try to help teach them over the long run about principles. Help clients understand what energy balance kind of looks like and how to estimate their portions using their hands, right? The good old precision nutrition, you can measure every food with just one hand. Teach them how to build those balanced meals by themselves, focusing on the carbohydrate source, the protein source, the fat source, finding something with fiber or color. Give them the tools to make good decisions in various situations rather than just dictating exactly this is what you eat. That's the hardest part of all this, and I've kind of beat this with a dead horse throughout this episode, but that's going to literally change people's lives if they can learn to do this and they can buy into it and they understand they don't have to count every single calorie for the rest of their life. Principle number five is going to be honest about what you don't know and what's outside your scope. This is really important for trainers and coaches. If a client has a complex medical condition that affects their nutritional needs, that needs to go to a registered dietitian or a physician. If a client asks about specific therapeutic diets for managing like a health condition, that's outside of our scope as coaches and trainers. Be willing to say that, hey, that's a great question, but I think that's best addressed by a dietitian. Here's someone I trust and recommend. That's going to build trust. It's going to protect both you and the client, and it's probably going to build some really good trust with you and a dietitian that you happen to be paired up with, because they're going to say, hey, we have a great trainer that's great on the exercise and getting the training program and making good quality nutrition recommendations, but things that they don't know, they have gained to us. They may be very willing to say, hey, I have somebody that's trying to lose weight and they have came to me for this dietary advice and I'm helping them with type 2 diabetes, for example. Well, they may recommend you as a trainer to help them with their exercise. So it can be a great two-way relationship, both from you and RD perspective, but also building the trust with the client that you're working with as well. One specific communication strategy that works well is using analogies and comparisons. So, for example, when explaining protein distribution throughout the day, you might use analogy of, like, say, building a house. You can't build the entire house in one day with all the materials delivered at once. You need materials delivered throughout the construction process. Similarly, right, that your body can only use so much protein at once for muscle building, so distributing it throughout the day is going to be more effective. You don't want to try to eat 200 grams of protein in one sitting. Explain how, again, adding those that protein up throughout the day is going to be, one, a little bit easier to do, and it's going to be more efficient and effective long-term for them. But finding the analogies and how you do that, again, going back to my car analogy, is a great way for people to understand stuff and pick it up much quicker. Another strategy I like is anticipating and addressing common concerns before they actually become problems. So if someone's trying to lose fat or they want to enter this quote-unquote fat loss phase, proactively discussing that weight loss is not linear, okay? Make sure that they know that the scale weight is just not going to go down like this. They're going to have some weeks where the scale doesn't move. It may even actually go up, especially if we talk about working with females and we talk about the menstrual cycle. Their weight can be all over the place over the course of a month just because of the hormonal changes that women see. They may be holding more water retention. So I think having those discussions early on can be somewhat proactive and put more realistic faith in the client. And that, hey, we're looking, we got to zoom out. We got to look at everything first, understand that the weight loss is not going to be straight linear all the way down every single day. And let them know that they're still doing everything right, and it's normal and it's expected. And this is going to prevent them from having like panicking or being discouraged when they happen to first see that first major plateau. And lastly, I want to remind you that all coaching is based on a relationship. And that includes working with clients on the nutrition side. The more that you know your clients and your athletes as individuals and people, their preferences, what they're challenged, their personality types, their lifestyles, the better that you can tailor nutrition guidance that actually works well for them. So this requires listening to them as an actual person more than talking many times and letting them lead the conversation so that you can get to know them again better as a person, but that also is going to guide you in your nutrition recommendations about what may work best for that individual person. Your goal is to not turn every single client into a nutrition expert. And actually, I would argue that's not the goal. The goal is for you to be the expert and make it the most simplest that they can understand, to where you can give them the level of guidance and education that empowers them to make the right decisions at hard times, and also just be picking up better quality, healthy foods, planning a little bit better with their meals, right? Taking maybe the right supplements that's going to fill the gaps that they happen to be low on based on their blood work, you know, coaching them up on their sleep, how the nutrition side of things aids their performance, whether that's gaining weight and strength and muscle and whatnot, or whether that's losing weight, or if that's guiding their nutrition to aid their performance in sport, if we're talking about athletes, and how that really fits into their lives and what they do on a daily basis. That's the big part when it comes to nutrition. All right. Let's wrap this up with some key takeaways that you can implement immediately if you need to with your clients. First, always start with energy balance. So before you start worrying about macronutrients and ratios, meal timing, any of that stuff, just make sure that the client's energy intake aligns with their goal. Everything else is secondary to this. So get this one right, and it's immediately going to make things easier for you. It's also going to make things easier for them. Number two, set that protein goal appropriately based on the client's body weight, their training status, you know, what they kind of want to do. Ease into that protein if it's super low. That's something I see a lot with athletes when we're making recommendations. We try to get them add one extra server of protein early on, and then maybe a second one, and then maybe a third one, and then we're probably up to where we need to be. So just focus on getting that protein where it should be as step number two. When you come time to focus on some macros, protein is going to be the most important one to get right for their body composition and to aid their performance. Third thing is, do not be crazy dogmatic about meal timing and frequency. Just find what works best for each individual person that you happen to work with, and or yourself, I guess, as well. And make recommendations to them based on their preferences, their schedule, and what's going to give them the highest amount of adherence. That perfect plan doesn't exist It's finding what works best for the client, and it's going to probably have to be flexible to some degree, especially as many people's lifestyles are incredibly busy. So find a plan that they can actually stick to. High adherence is going to be much more likely that they see their progress, not over the long term, but also they'll see progress even faster. Number four, keep supplements incredibly simple. Refer out when you need to there and go with the more evidence-based ones when you can. Focus on the basics that are actually going to work. If you are going to talk about supplements, protein powder for convenience, creatine for most clients, especially those that are high performers, and strategically using caffeine just when you need it. Don't have your clients waste their money on products that's weak or little no evidence. Have them actually spend money on better quality food, making better food choices, maybe the supplements that they need to fill the gaps with, and or finding a way that they can use that money that benefits their lifestyle elsewhere. Maybe that's an extra vacation. Maybe that's going to a show. Maybe it's going out to a nice dinner once a month. Put that money elsewhere to where they're actually going to enjoy it and see a much better progress from it, not on junky supplements. Number five is going to understand that effective coaching is all about the communication and behavior change just as much as it is about us knowing the science behind the nutrition. Meet your clients and athletes where they are, focus on the behaviors, not just the outcomes, and build flexibility into how all of your approaches, just like you would if you're writing your training programs. Training programs are going to have some flexibility. Sometimes you're going to tweak things as you go. Nutrition coaching and nutrition help, helping people with their nutrition, is the exact same way. Communicate as much as you possibly can. Do as much as you can to help them out on the communication front, get to know them, and that's going to help them stay on board much easier, especially if we're talking about working with people online. In person, it is a little bit more difficult because you're probably not going to have an easier way to communicate with them all the time. You're going to probably just see them during their training sessions. But just make sure that you do get some good quality communication and focus on behavior change. Here's what I want you to do after listening to this episode. If you haven't stayed with me for the whole hour 15, I really appreciate it. First, review your current client nutrition protocols or what you are recommending. Are you starting with the energy balance stuff? Are you jumping straight to macronutrient manipulations? You know, are you setting your protein goals appropriately for clients? Are you recommending things that are flexible to fit real life scenarios? You know, make sure you get those things figured out. And if you do that, now you're going to have some protocols that you can quickly just know off the top of your head that you can make even as you're just meeting with people, maybe even like at a family gathering. Number two, it's going to be vital. Identify one or two clients who would benefit from a more thorough nutrition discussion using everything we kind of talked about today. You can probably think of, if you work with clients or you work with people, you can probably think of one or two people that you can immediately help by just giving basic information like this. And you can either schedule conversations with them, say, hey, I've got a, maybe you put it together into a free one-page guide of the four steps that we kind of talked about today, and you give that to them completely free to be able to nudge them in the right direction, and they're going to see that as a huge value. And then maybe that sparks a conversation to be able to get them on some nutrition coaching with you if that is something that you offer or you're considering on getting into. Number three is going to be do more to educate yourself on just nutrition. This is something that I agree that I can always do better on. I try to pay a little bit more attention to what comes out from the research side, right? I really do try to keep up with people that are good with the nutrition side because things are evolving on the science side everywhere when it comes to our field. But if you kind of dive in deep for, say, 3 months on just nutrition, try to really learn a lot more, it's just going to be the more that you understand and the better that you can serve your clients when questions come up. But also don't be afraid to always refer out and or find somebody else that does know a lot more than you that you can recommend that they go to if they want to really dive deep into a certain topic, say low carbs, for example, or carnivore diet, whatever. But filter everything that you can, that you are absorbing through just a practical application lens, and use, know that that knowledge doesn't necessarily always translate to better client outcomes if you don't know how you can, if you don't know how you can use it in a practical approach with them. You also need to remember that you don't need to be a registered dietitian to actually provide valuable nutrition guidance to your clients within your scope of practice. as trainers and coaches, we do need to be educated on the nutrition front. We do not have to be as educated as a registered dietitian, though we still should be rather educated. Okay, we should know everything that I've talked about here today, if not more, to be able to make good quality informed decisions for our clients. And then we use the registered dietitian as needed to be a partner in that framework for the specific cases that we happen to have. So if you've got the understanding of the fundamentals, your ability to communicate those fundamentals effectively, using your wisdom of also working with other clients or maybe even yourself, can then build trust with your clients, and then they will not be afraid to come to you with questions, because chances are there are clients that do have questions. They just probably don't want to talk to you, and or maybe they don't want to hear what you have to say because you're going to tell them exactly what they probably found on the Google machine or through ChatGPT or what have you, right? I do think that nutrition is one of the biggest gaps that we have between getting that personal training certification or your CSCS or even your bachelor's degree and what you actually need to know to be effective with clients and athletes. By learning how to take these fundamentals and developing ability to communicate with your clients and athletes, just in general when it comes to training, but I think nutrition is that one subset that we don't do a good enough job on of having a good quality communication route and conversation, you are setting yourself apart from the other trainers and coaches who happen to ignore the nutrition entirely, or they just repeat whatever diet trend is currently popular. So if you happen to find today's episode valuable, make sure you're subscribed to the Thirst More podcast over on YouTube. Give us a 5-star rating over on Apple iTunes, Spotify, wherever you happen to enjoy your podcast. Give us a rating. I really would appreciate that. That really helps us out. And also want to make sure that you don't miss out on future episodes. Have been a little bit spotty with some of the holiday things and everything going on. It has just been a pretty busy time for me trying to carve out some time here to record these episodes. So if you are listening in, I really do appreciate it. And it does mean a lot to me. So I'm always going to do my best to try to have several of these out a month. But as always, I appreciate you listening to this exact episode. If you do happen to, if you are a fitness professional, coach, whatever, and you did happen to find this useful, I'd really appreciate it. Just send a buddy a link, maybe share about it in your Instagram stories, over on Facebook, what have you, any of that really helps me out. I really appreciate it. And the more that we help educate people, that's ultimately what I'm here to do, is help share some education and pass on some things that have worked well for me, my clients, and for my business. So again, make sure that you're keeping up on your nutrition front, share this with somebody that would really benefit. And until next time, I really appreciate you turning in, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.